In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, I talked to Derek Reimer and Ben Orenstein about the art of product. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 354. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob, and Mike is out this week, so I'll be talking to Derek Reimer and Ben Orenstein, and we're all here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So this week, very excited to invite Derek and Ben on the show. If you haven't heard of them, they co-host a podcast called The Art of Product. You might recognize Derek's name because he is the co-founder of Drip, and he has been on this show a couple times in the past. And Ben Orenstein spoke at MicroConf Starter this year, and he's maybe best known for hosting the Giant Robots podcast, as well as being a prolific Ruby on Rails developer. And he recently left Thoughtbot to go out on his own. So without further ado, let's dive right into the interview. So Derek, Ben, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
Hey, thanks for having us.
So Ben, before I even intro you, I want to start with a story that I cut you off right before the recording started. And you said, hey, I went to the emergency room this weekend. And I said, really, what happened? And what was your next sentence?
I said, have you ever heard of acro yoga?
And that is the best lead-in to an emergency room trip I've ever heard. So walk us through that, Ben. What happened?
Sure. So acro yoga, I guess, is short for acrobatic yoga. And the basic gist is it's a partner practice. So you're doing a lot of lifts and things of that nature. And so on Friday night, I was sitting basically. So someone was, my partner was laying on the ground with his legs at 90 degrees in like an L. And I was sitting on his feet and leaning backwards in a back bend. And it turns out this guy was basically too small to base me. That's what he was doing was called. And so he just wasn't quite strong enough to support my weight. And so the first time we tried it, I fell off to the side harmlessly. And we're like, oh, that didn't quite work. Let's try that again. And he was like, yeah, okay, we can try it again. And didn't have a spotter and really should have stopped at that point, realizing he just wasn't quite strong enough to do it. But we went for it anyway. And the second time, he sort of collapsed and ended up dumping me more or less back onto my head backwards.
Ouch.
Yeah.
And so concrete?
No. So we train in this, it's an actually Aikido studio where they're like used to throwing people. So there are mats, which was good. But I ended up basically doing a back somersault over my head with a degree of mobility requirement that I don't have. So I heard all the vertebrae in my neck pop.
Ouch.
And felt this intense strain on all the muscles that run like from my neck down my back. And I sort of rolled out of it and came up and was like, okay, I can feel my fingers. I can feel my toes. Okay, that's good. Nothing's tingling. I don't see any spots. I don't think I have a broken neck, but all that tissue and musculature along the side of my neck was basically on fire. And I couldn't turn my head to the left and I couldn't look up or down. I could just only keep my head perfectly straight. And so I kind of tried to walk it off for a few minutes and then was like, no, I'm going to go to the hospital. And so I did. And they put me in a neck collar. Or a cervical collar, and we're like, we're going to CT scan your neck, and hopefully there's no bone damage. And fortunately, it turns out there was not.
Wow.
So just soft tissue stuff, which is great because it'll heal fairly quickly. I was definitely worried there would be some bone problems or, you know, worse, like spinal damage of some kind, but got off pretty easy, it turns out.
Well, yeah, because that stuff, it hangs around forever then. You know, it's like anybody I know who's had even these minor back injuries or neck injuries, that it's just like decades of kind of dealing with it. So.
Yeah.
Well, that's good news, man.
Yeah.
Glad you're okay.
Well, thank you.
Do you regularly do acro yoga?
I regularly do it over the last 2 weeks.
Okay.
I've sort of fallen in love with it over the last handful of days. It's super fun. And like, I love, except for the crashing on my head, the changes it's causing in my body. Like I feel way more mobile and strong in like interesting ways. So I'm totally digging it.
That's cool. You think you'll go back once you're healed?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I learned some lessons. I got off kind of easy and learned some lessons along the way. Like, should have absolutely had a spotter, should not have had someone who I outweigh by 50 pounds trying to support me, should have realized when it failed the first time that we should have either stopped or gotten a spotter. Just, there were a lot of warning signs that I kind of just brushed by that now I think will set off much stronger warning bells in my head.
Indeed.
Indeed. Well, I want to take a step back and, you know, give a little introduction of both of you guys. Derek, my co-founder of Drip and now VP of engineering for Drip at LeadPages, lives here in Minneapolis. And Derek, you've been on the podcast twice before. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, a couple times. You talked about the Code Tree sale, and then I don't remember what we talked about the other time. But so folks should, you know, be relatively familiar with you. And then Ben Orenstein, formerly of the Giant Robots podcast, and now you're out on your own, independent, and you actually were a speaker at MicroConf Starter Edition this year. And we've all known each other for a few years now. So the reason I wanted to bring you guys on is a couple things. One, because you've launched a new podcast. It's called The Art of Product. And I think that anyone listening to Startups or the Rest of Us who is thinking about building software products and going the SaaS route should take a listen to The Art of Product. You guys are, what, maybe 8 or 10 episodes in?
Yeah, about 10.
And, you know, you guys have a good vibe, right? It's conversational. You are both developers. I almost said Rails developers, but I know you're now dabbling in Elm and Elixir and other things. Or maybe you've always dabbled in those. But, you know, I just think that for folks who want to hear more, an even more technical look at starting software companies and then a technical look at building software, because both of you have done it now for a decade or more, I think The Art of Product is a podcast for them to check out. Have you been enjoying the first 10 episodes? Has it been fun?
Yeah, I've been having fun with it. I'm still surprised sometimes that people actually enjoy listening to us just talk about what we're working on. but I know that personally, like that's one of my favorite formats when I'm listening to a podcast, is just kind of, you know, hearing what people in the industry are up to and kind of the day-to-day things that they're struggling through or having triumph over. So yeah, it's been fun to just keep chronicling our story and hearing positive feedback from folks on Twitter and stuff. That's always, you know, it's a good kind of shipping, I think.
Yeah, I would second that. I think the radio has gotten a little more interesting lately since I quit my job and went independent. And now Derek is running working on a large successful SaaS company, and I am working on a small product business. So we have kind of two interesting angles on making money online.
Yeah, that's cool. And Ben, how would you summarize the podcast in, you know, a couple sentences?
It's two dudes talking, you know, a brand new groundbreaking format that no one has tried before.
Right, right. No, but it works because you both have personality and you're both doing interesting things, which really helps, right? And not just in work. It's like, Ben, you're in a barbershop quartet and you're, you know, doing acro yoga and occasionally falling on your head. And, you know, Derek is traveling. He's always working on side projects. He has his blog. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. And I think that's always interesting. People make interesting radio is how I think about it.
Yeah. I think one strength that we bring to the table is that I think Derek and I both do a pretty good job of not filtering too much. So we've had episodes where one or both of us have been like really struggling or feeling really down, and we don't sugarcoat that. We don't shy away from it. And so like I quit my job about 2 months ago. And so I think it's episode 2 or something. And I'm just kind of, you can tell I'm reeling basically. I was expecting it to be hard, but it ended up being just much more shocking than I anticipated. And I'm super, super down. And I'm like talking about what's freaking me out and why I'm scared and what's harder than I thought it would be. And I think we both do a pretty decent job of putting that out there, because I think it's good to have that kind of stuff exposed. And I think it's useful for some people to hear that and to understand what it's like to try scary things and to realize that, hey, if I'm having these feelings, I'm not the only person doing it. I'm not the only person that experiences things like this.
Yeah, we joke that like sometimes it just turns into a therapy session. but like, I think a big part of that is trying to like kind of debunk the imposter syndrome that a lot of people experience, and to let people know that like even people who are quote unquote successful or have been doing, you know, what they do for a long time still kind of go through the same struggles that you're going through if you're even, you know, newer to the industry or something. So I think we're always trying to be authentic and genuine. And to me, I started having a lot more fun once I started kind of breaking down those walls and just trying to, you know, put it all out there every week.
Yeah, I think that authenticity comes across too. And I can tell you guys aren't too, you may have outlines, but I guess they're pretty loose. You don't edit much inside the episodes. You just kind of talk and what comes out goes to tape. Is that accurate? That's just my guess.
Yeah.
Yep, that's pretty much on.
That's cool. Awesome. And for folks who are familiar with the Giant Robots, Smashing into Other Giant Robots, is that the correct title of the previous podcast?
That is, yes.
Smashing into, okay, it's long, so I always forget this. It was smashing or banging or something. Ben, you were the host of that for what, hundreds of episodes, right? That's
Yeah. So I used to work at a company called Thoughtbot, and we had that podcast, launched it about 4 years ago, I think. And I was the host through that whole run, something like 210 episodes, somewhere around there. And around, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 episodes ago, I brought Derek on as a co-host. And other people had been co-host, or I had done interview formats in the past, but the most recent incarnation was Derek and I doing what we do now on Art of Product.
Very cool. And that actually leads into talking about the transition. You mentioned that you worked for Thoughtbot for the last several years. I think it's the bulk of kind of your professional career. And you've just recently transitioned away from that full-time work to being independent. And you're working on a product right now and have ideas for other stuff. But talk a little bit about that transition, like, you know, what inspired it, how it's gone, some of the, you know, the pitfalls, but also the fun stuff that's happened.
So yeah, I was at Thoughtbot for 6 years, and I was working on Thoughtbot's SaaS apps. And so I had started one of them, it was called Upcase, and I had ended up managing another one of them called Formkeep. And that was really an awesome experience. I had started off just as a consultant there, writing Ruby, and then eventually ended up more on the business side, which is exactly where I wanted my career to go. I'd fallen a little bit out of love with programming at that time. I wanted sort of a new field and a new challenge, rather than trying to continue leveling up my programming skills. And so getting to start those businesses and run those businesses was perfect for me. But after a handful of years of that, it started to just get a little too samey. And I've always, my whole life, thrived when I am pushing myself into difficult situations, especially with a steep learning curve. That's when I'm happiest, when my pace of improvement is noticeable and I'm getting better at something all the time. And I felt like I had wrung a lot of the experience and knowledge out of what I could do at Thoughtbot. And I felt like I needed to make some sort of change. And honestly, I didn't know fully what I wanted to do when I left, but I knew it was about time to try it. And so I decided to, I talked to a bunch of people first, you included, Rob, and just said, hey, here's roughly what I'm thinking. Here's my financial situation. Here's my background. Here's what I might work on. Am I crazy? And pretty much everyone said, nah, you're not crazy. Like, this seems pretty reasonable. And so I decided to go for it. And so after spending some time thinking about what my first effort might be, I decided to build a course. So I ended up with, after my time at Thoughtbot, with a lot of Ruby on Rails knowledge in particular about how to write good Rails apps. And so the first thing I'm working on is a course called Refactoring Rails, which is targeted at people that have been working on a Rails app for maybe a couple of years and started to see the pace of development slow down. And this pretty much always happens. It's almost impossible to not slow down, but there are a number of specific tactical things you can do, changes you can make to your app, and features you can use or not use that will help make that slow down minimal. And so my days mostly these right now are cranking out videos. So I plan out a video and then record it and edit it and send it out to my list and repeat.
So you've gone from hosting a podcast and writing code and marketing a SaaS app to recording videos and pushing them out. Like, has that been, is the work as fulfilling? Is it more fulfilling? Like, what is that?
I would say it's not quite as fulfilling. I do miss programming, and there is a little bit of programming. The videos I'm recording are actually me writing code live and like showing how I would refactor things. And so there is a coding component to it. But I am finding myself more and more missing that deep work of focusing on a programming problem for a whole day and just having the time race by. I find it harder to get into flow when I'm doing tasks like editing video or planning out a video. And so I think the result of this course might be that I want to get back into some sort of programming thing.
Yeah, I could see that. And Derek, you and I talk frequently enough about like the importance of allowing our developers on the Drip team to get into that deep work, that flow state. That's something that I know that you talk about. The dopamine rush for you has always been pushing features into production. But I also know that part of your job that you have loved the most is being able to, you know, put the headphones on, sip the latte, and get into the deep zone and get a lot of code cranked out.
Yeah, I think that's the creative muscle that you're getting to exercise. And it's hard to, like, when you're a developer and that's kind of like your natural form of creative expression, it's hard to not have that as a certain element of your day to day. And I don't think it has to be 100% of it, but I feel like for me, like, it would always have to be a percentage, I feel like, to for me to feel like I'm exercising that muscle.
Yeah, that makes sense. And do you feel like, given maybe not the last couple weeks, because I know that you were out of town last week, and I think I was out of town the week before and stuff, so I'm sure there's a lot of stuff going on, but over the past 3 to 4 months, as our team has grown up to, when we were acquired a year ago, we were what, 3 engineers, and I think we're at 10 at this point. So you have a lot more role, you know, managerial and kind of technical lead roles, that your role has expanded, I'll put it that way. Do you feel like over the past 3 or 4 months, you've still been able to have moments where you do get inflow?
Yeah, there's been moments for sure. It's been less than it used to be, definitely. I will also say that I get a lot of satisfaction off of working with one of the team members, maybe pair programming. I've talked about that a fair amount on Art of Product, where, you know, it's like me and one other developer, and we're working through a hard problem. And even if I'm not writing a lot of code there, and I'm just doing more of the thinking or assisting with some of the thinking, the thought process of solving the problem, that also tends to kind of give me the same rush. So I think, you know, and watching some team members be successful at balancing between kind of the designers and the JavaScript engineers and the backend engineers, and seeing that whole machine work, and knowing that I can kind of push things in the right direction at various points to keep people unblocked, that definitely gives me some of that satisfaction as well. But yeah, it's a different kind of satisfaction, I think. And it's hard to compare it to true flow state, you know?
Yeah. I totally agree. I had to make that transition as well several years ago, because I basically stopped writing production code the day you locked me out of the repo when I tried to push them.
Oh, yeah.
The apocryphal code change that I tried to make that Derek rejected. But I still miss it. I don't regret the decision that I made to transition away from coding full time, but I absolutely miss those so many days when you can just, yeah. As Ben said, the day goes so fast, because you look up and you haven't eaten lunch, and you're 4 hours in, you know, you're 4 hours past the time. So anyways, transitioning back, Ben, you know, we got off on a tangent a little bit, but you were talking about your transition, and that it's, you know, the work itself is a little less fulfilling right now. How has it been? You know, I know one of the concerns you had that you voiced on Art of Product was that you were concerned you'd be isolated or feel isolated, because you are an extrovert and you get motivated by being around people and by being on a team. And how has that, do you find that you did feel isolated? And then how have you kind of combated that?
Yeah, I definitely felt it. And that was one of the things that came up in those early days, was I was expecting that part to be hard, because I know I'm an extrovert, but it was even harder than I thought it would be. The good news is I found some coping strategies that worked pretty well for me. So I quickly got a co-working space. And so going to a place where other people are working and I can just chat with people even while I'm filling up my water makes a pretty big difference. And it's little things, it's small interactions. I wouldn't say I have any like deep new friendships at the co-working space, but it's those little things, like someone to grab lunch with, someone to get coffee with, someone to say hi to, that really just energizes me in a deep way. So that helped. I wouldn't say I've solved it by any means. So when I'm recording video and editing it, I do that all in, I need to do that in a quiet space. It has to be away from everybody else. And even when I'm planning out an episode, it's a lot of deep work of writing and focus. So the co-working space has kind of worked as a hack, but at the end of the day, no one's on my team. It's just me doing this effort, and I'm the only one paying attention to it in a certain way. And so I wouldn't say I've solved it. I think I'm still very much a team person. I like working on stuff with people. And so I've gotten some of that social interaction squared away. That's helping. But I still feel at times a bit of a yearning for other people to care about what I'm doing and to be doing things with a group.
I think that's a good point. You know, Derek, you and I have talked, and in the past, I know at one point you were a single founder and wanted to be kind of, you know, the solopreneur and run a small lifestyle business. And then after we started working together, we found the partnership just, it works so well. And then we grew a team and we enjoyed working with our original team. And now obviously the folks we've hired. How has your thinking changed, or has it changed on that whole kind of the running a company on your own versus more what Ben's talking about, which is getting energy from the team? And in future efforts, assuming you move on at some point to do another project, like, do you think that you'll want to be solo, or do you think you'll want to have a team around you?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think it definitely has morphed my thinking about it. You know, I feel like 4 or 5 years ago, I was all about like, well, how much can I do as one solo person? You know, how many hats can I wear in the most strategic way so that it's like I'm just captain of my own destiny, one person going solo? And my feelings about that have definitely changed with, you know, our collaboration with Drip, with working with the core team. I mean, it's fun to fun to grow the team and see, you know, the full actualization of Drip at a larger scale. But I still look fondly back at the days where it was like, you know, a core team of five or six of us sitting in an office together. That was really, I feel like, the sweet spot of, you know, just working with a small enough team where you can all be in a room together. You can all bat around ideas. You have a lot of people on the team who are kind of cross functional. So maybe Anna in customer success is doing a call and then throws something, an idea across the room, and the developers are both sitting there and we kind of hash stuff out and get on a whiteboard. And those kind of interactions are golden. And it's hard to imagine not at least having a small team like that with a future endeavor at some point. I mean, it may start out solo, but yeah, I couldn't imagine trying to wear all the hats and do everything on my own.
I think back to when I was working full time for other people. It's funny because Ben's insight into himself of needing other people around him is obviously shows Ben, you've done a lot of, you kind of know yourself pretty well. When I was leaving full time work, I was the exact opposite in the sense that I knew I didn't want to be around people. So the thing that I look forward to most was going and like working in my bedroom and never talking to anyone. And that's, I think, just, you know, I'm an introvert, and it shows like kind of the difference of personalities that even two software developers can have. You know, I think you don't necessarily fit the mold of that, of the software developer who wants to go in their basement and code. You seem to really, I don't know, straddle multiple worlds, I think, with kind of the extrovert and the personality and the ability to speak very well from stage, as well as also having mad code chops.
I appreciate that. I think it's, I'm not sure why that is. I guess I've just always enjoyed like disparate skills. Like, since I enjoy the steep part of the learning curve, I want to not just get really good at code and then keep getting better at programming. I want to be good at programming, and then I want to learn how to speak in front of people, and I want to learn how to run a business, and I want to learn how to market. And so I think I've, over a long time of doing all this, put together a handful of skills that you maybe don't see in one person. I think maybe that's the exception. People tend to focus on a thing and be like, hey, I'm really good at this, I'm going to double down on this. Whereas I'm like, hey, I'm okay at this, I'd like to pick up a couple more skills that I'm okay at.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay, so we're going to do over under here. I'm going to say 10 years, and both of you are going to answer this. 10 years.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is good. Will you still be committing code to a production repo that, you know, that people are using? Or, you know, you can still work at a software company or be running a software company or whatever, but 10 years over or under?
Man, that's a fascinating question.
I hate to put you on the spot. I was just kind of thinking out loud. I just think it's a fascinating thing to think about, you know?
My guess is I still will be. There's only been a handful of things that I have found so fascinating that they've retained my interest over a super long time. And programming has been one of them. And so I'd be kind of surprised to see that change. I think we're at a renaissance of writing code for money and to provide value to businesses and things like that. So I feel like this industry is only going to get more interesting. And I think if I had to guess, it's going to hold my interest. And I'm going to want to still be making stuff directly.
Yep. So we get an over from Ben. How about you, Derek?
It's an over from me as well. I feel pretty strongly, and I feel like this is not something I've totally, not a hypothesis I've totally tested, but I feel like it is possible to still be kind of the captain of a company, CEO, as you may call them, and still be a person who contributes code. I think you see, you know, a traditional trend that you see is people, you know, starting out as a developer, writing the code, and then walking away from the code so that they can focus on the rest of the business aspect. And I think that is certainly one path you can take. But I feel like there is a secondary path where it's like, instead of totally giving up the code and focusing on marketing or what that other side of the business, I feel like you can still be a technical CEO founder and ultimately hire or get this through a co-founder that have the marketing side of the business. And I feel like you can flip that on its head so you don't have to totally walk away from the code. And I'm at least hoping that that's a model that works, because it's hard to picture myself not actually being involved in code at all. I still can't picture what that would look like.
Yeah, I have a quick anecdote that supports that idea, Derek, which is 6 years ago, I went into interview at Thoughtbot, and I was supposed to talk to the CEO, Chad, and he's like, hey, I'll be with you in 1 second. I just want to get this test passing.
Nice.
And that had such an impact on me. I was like, oh, I'm definitely going to work here. That is such a good sign. Like, when the CEO is still doing technical work, he's still technical, but even more importantly, it means he understands what the life of being a developer is, like, still. and there's no disconnect there. And that was awesome. And also recently, Alex McCaw, who's the CEO of Clearbit, which is a company that I respect like crazy. I reached out to him on Twitter and said, hey, are you still writing any code for Clearbit? And he said, yeah, I wrote the feature that we're shipping tomorrow. And so it's totally possible. And I think it's a workable model.
Mad props. Yeah. Peter from Teamwork. He's the co-founder. He still commits code to the repo, and there are over 100 employees now. They do 15 million ARR or something like that in their SaaS app. So I know there are folks out there, they're doing that.
Yeah. So we're both overs. Does that mean we shouldn't start a company together, Derek?
Yeah. I think your skill sets may not be complementary.
Yeah.
I have a lot of overlap.
Rob, what do you think about that? Like, do you think if I was like, hey, I want to get really serious about growing a SaaS company, is giving up the code something that I should consider?
You know, it depends on what you mean by really serious. I mean, if you want to go to, you know, you want to build a decamillion ARR SaaS company, I do think it would be something that I would consider. I think it would be the most efficient way to get there, just because coding at a certain point would become a distraction. And it's so hard. I mean, if you're going to head up a company, you become interrupt driven because you have to drop everything when people slack you. And I just can't imagine enjoying coding. You could probably still get some code written. I just can't imagine enjoying that when people are pinging me on Slack because they, you know, they need an answer or stuff's going to fall over in the next hour.
Yeah. So given that I could, if I wanted to pair up with somebody, I would either be looking for someone technical to head up the technical stuff or the other stuff to head up that side. And so in your mind, is finding the technical co-founder an easier thing to do than the opposite?
Boy. I think for you, since you could do either, but you enjoy the code more, my opinion would be that you should be able to find someone to do operational stuff is really, mm-hmm. you know, what side you need. And since you're going to be, you would be so opinionated about the code in a good way if you're running it, but in a bad way if your co-founder is running that. You know, you could imagine that the arguments or the disagreements that emerge from that. So personally, I think if you do still want to stay in the code, and I don't think that's a terrible choice. If you can find somebody who, you know, who can be the operations person, hopefully, I think as Derek and I found, hopefully someone who maybe used to be a developer and doesn't want to write code anymore and does want to walk away. Because I feel like part of the power of Derek and my partnership is that I'm technical enough, you know? I mean, I wrote production code 4 years ago or 5 years ago. And so we still can have really in-depth conversations, especially in the early days when it was just the two of us. And he could talk to me about, I don't even know, just detailed stuff you can't talk to a non-technical person about. I feel like that might be, you just having seen Derek and my model work, that might be the perfect fit for you.
Yeah, I think you and I have we overlap in all the right ways. Like I care about the business side, and I actually want to be involved in the business strategy conversations, but I'm also my main focus is the code. And likewise, you're predominantly thinking about product and operational type of stuff for the team, but we can sit down and hash out like, all right, here's what I'm thinking for this architectural piece, and we talk stuff through, and those are usually productive conversations as well. So I feel like we both kind of step into each other's territory, but not in a harmful way or a clashing way, but just in like a very complimentary way.
Yeah. And I think we've had conversations where if we do wind up, we both have opinions on all the areas of the company or the product. And if we wind up disagreeing about something, I will absolutely be like, this is a technical decision and it's yours. You know, like I step away and I don't feel like I have any more insight into it than I feel like I have a lot less insight into it. And that Derek has the, you know, kind of has the ownership and the responsibility of it. So Derek, we've kind of covered Ben's transition, you know, away from full-time work to independence. And just about a year ago, I guess it was about 13 months ago, you and I sold Drip to Lead Pages, and a month or two later, we moved to Minneapolis. So what's new in your life?
Yeah. So obviously moving is a big step for me. I'd never lived outside of the town that I was born and raised in. So I kind of been taking this as an opportunity to kind of experience something new. And it's I definitely don't regret the decision. You know, Minneapolis is an awesome city. So we've been getting to kind of enjoy everything that comes with living in a really world-class city. And that's been a great experience. And also like just joining a company of 180 people has been a great learning experience too. Most of my work experience prior to that had been at small companies. So I was at a small family business in college that I worked at part-time, or just a few of us in an office. And then obviously Drip grew to, you know, 10 people. So to be part of a large organization is a fascinating experience to just kind of observe and see how things operate and see how many of the things that we kind of figured out along the way actually translate well into a larger organization. So yeah, it's been a fun ride.
What do you think has been the hardest thing about the transition for you, you know, personally or professionally?
I think the biggest struggle is probably all aspects of scaling the company. So, you know, on the technical side, we've been dealing with quite a bit of database issues and queue issues. And these are all things that come with the territory of growing a business like this. And when you're acquired and now you suddenly have thousands more trials than you had before, these are all things that are naturally going to happen. But it's been, I would say, a period of very aggressive learning where you kind of have to be on the ball all the time, looking around the corner for the next scaling challenge. And that has been, it's been pretty exhausting, I'll say. And I think I felt that recently, and this is why the vacation I took this last week has helped me. And I think I need to do a little more of that because it's been a pretty intense year of just learning and working through scaling challenges and also like growing a team. I mean, we now have a development team of 10 folks, and you know, we're very picky in our hiring. So the hiring process was pretty long to get the team up to where it is today. And just figuring out how to scale myself and decouple myself from processes where I would normally had been, you know, previously in deeply involved in has been a challenge, but a good challenge. You know, I mean, it's good to see the team start to take responsibility for things that I normally would have been kind of squarely on my shoulders. So yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's been the hardest part as well. I mean, moving to a 180-person company when we first moved here, I mean, coming back to the conversation earlier about introvert versus extrovert, it is interesting that although I am introverted and I don't, you know, when I wanted to go solo or go out on my own, I didn't want to work with a bunch of other people. But by the time that we had grown Drip, I really enjoyed working with you guys. And so I moved here and I was the only one from the Drip team just sitting in the corner on my own. And that was felt super lonely and isolating. And then as you one by one started showing up, it was like, oh, this feels so much better. You know, it was good to have the team around.
Yeah.
So mixing things up a little bit, Ben, I wanted to come back to the course you're working on. You mentioned, you know, your video course, is it Refactoring Rails? What's the name of it?
Yes, that's right.
Yep. All right, cool. So I'm sure there are some folks, you know, listening to this episode that want to learn more about it, potentially check out. I think you give away a couple of the videos so people can hear about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Where is that? What URL?
Refactoringrails.io.
Cool. And you've been working on that for a couple months. And are you releasing that in kind of as you go, or is there like a launch date coming up?
So I've been releasing samples. So I have 4 videos done out of what I expect to be about 10. So making progress, chipping away. And every time I finish one, I send out either the whole thing or part of it to the people that are on the launch list. So it's been dripping out steadily.
Very cool. So refactoringrails.io. And you're using Drip for that launch list, am I right?
100%.
Indeed. All right. I just wanted to check.
Yeah, yeah. And after most Art of Product episodes, I get free tech support from Derek.
Oh, totally. Hey, Derek, yeah. How does this thing work? Yeah. It's like,
that's it, folks. If you want a mainline to co-founder of Drip, you just got to start
a podcast and write a podcast. Oh.
So I have a quick question for you, Rob, actually, speaking of free tech support. This is actually like free marketing support. So I believe by default, when I make a campaign in Drip, it has this option checked. So it will only send emails to people in their like local time zone at 11 a.m. or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that's a default, but I have it checked on one of my campaigns. Would you call that a best practice? Is that typically going to give good results, or do I need to not worry about that?
I would say, well, yes, it is best practice in terms of like all the split tests and experiments I've done over the years. That's kind of a default. And it, you know, if it's 10 a.m., it depends on what time zone you're in, right? So if you're on, let's see, if you're on the East Coast, you don't want it to be too early for people on Pacific. So I would tend to go a little later, maybe at, I mean, around 11, between 10 and noon, probably. Whereas if I'm on Pacific, I might go a little earlier. But to be honest, if you're 1 or 2 hours or 3 hours off, like you're going to see very small difference.
Yeah.
Like it's not, you know, when at our scale, meaning thousands or tens of thousands of people on a list, it kind of doesn't matter. So I wouldn't be super worried about it. You can, of course, run, you know, the split testing in Drip, and you could test that out on your own audience, but I bet you probably wouldn't have enough clicks to actually get a, you know, what do they call it? A statistically significant answer, or it would just be so similar if you tried 11 versus 1 PM or something.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. And it kind of comes down to almost just my impatience.
Yeah.
Like, I'll finish a thing on Friday at 3 and I'm like, oh, no one's going to get this until Monday at 11. And I just, like, I want the feedback faster.
You know, you could try sending a broadcast right when you get it done Friday at 3 and just do kind of a poor man split test. Because you know your historical, you can look at all your opens and all your click rates. And, you know, just try it once and see if it tanks. Yep. I know that accidentally one time, this is pre-drip, I was in MailChimp and I scheduled something instead of like 10 a.m., I scheduled it for 10 p.m. And it was not good, like, because it was buried in people's inboxes. And so that when they went through to delete, it wasn't kind of near the top as they were working. And so I remember the open rate being substantially less. And I ran a couple other experiments where I sent it odd times, and sometimes it hurts and sometimes it doesn't matter. But I think generally during the day for a work audience is pretty good. Now, I ran a job website at one point and it was Sunday. Everyone thinks about applying for jobs on Sundays because they hate their job. So there would be this big spike in traffic, and that's where these emails would get the most traction. It was bizarre stuff. So
makes sense.
That's it. Cool. So refactoringrails.io. And Derek, you have a blog at scalingsass.net that you don't update very often. Is that right?
I'm going to correct you. Scalingsass.com.
Oh, yes, that's right. You got the .com. Good for you. Yeah.
Yes. I wanted to blog more than I actually have, which is why podcasting has been a good medium for me. But I do occasionally crank out a post here or there. So yeah, scalingsass.com. You can follow me in text there.
Sounds good. Well, gentlemen, thanks again for coming on the show. And if folks want to hear more from you, they can head over to the Art of Product podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. My pleasure. So that wraps us up for today. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot. It's used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsoftherestofus.com for a full transcript. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.